What's the economic legacy of the Good Friday Agreement? Live from the BBC World Service, this is the Marketplace Morning Report. I'm Leanna Byrne. This weekend marks 25 years since the Good Friday Agreement was signed. It was a political deal to bring an end to 30 years of violent conflict in Northern Ireland, known as the Troubles. But the aim was not only to unite communities, but also enable stability and cross-border trading that would allow the economy to grow. One particular sector that has reaped the benefits is the dairy industry. Dr. Mike Johnson is Chief Executive of the Dairy Council for Northern Ireland. He spoke to the BBC's Felicity Hanna.
Well, before the Good Friday Agreement, the industry had really only expanded relatively small way since the UK had acceded to the membership of the EEC in 1973. But post the Good Friday Agreement, we've seen milk production in Northern Ireland increase by something like 68%. We're now producing around 15 to 20% of the total milk production in the UK. But actually, just as listening to what Angus was saying there, when we go back, if you go back into those dark days, we still at that time had quite a significant doorstep delivery of milk in Northern Ireland with glass bottles. And the local constabulary used that as an early warning sign, because whenever there was any sign of trouble coming, what the constabulary found was that the trippage of the glass bottles actually started to reduce, because these were used for petrol bombs. So we've seen quite a massive change. But what it has allowed us to do on the back of the Good Friday Agreement, it has created that environment in which companies have had the confidence to invest in the processing facilities, both in Northern Ireland and in the Republic of Ireland. So we now have about a third of the milk produced in Northern Ireland, around 800 million litres per year, that is moved on a daily basis into the Republic of Ireland. It's mixed with milk from the Republic of Ireland and manufactured into final products.
Dr. Mike Johnson of the Dairy Council for Northern Ireland there. Now, let's do the numbers. Samsung is cutting memory chip production after it's estimated a 96% drop in its quarterly operating profits. It said sales had dropped sharply due to a slow global economy and less demand after the pandemic. A mailer in Australia says he may sue OpenAI, the company behind ChatGPT, after it falsely claimed he had served time in prison for bribery. The web app incorrectly identified Brian Hood, the mayor of Hepburnshire, northwest of Melbourne, as the guilty party in a corruption scandal, which he had in fact exposed. From Sydney, the BBC's Phil Mercer reports.
Brian Hood was the whistleblower in a corruption scandal involving a company owned by the Reserve Bank of Australia. Several people were charged. Mr. Hood was very much not one of them. But that fact didn't stop an article generated by ChatGPT, an automated writing service powered by artificial intelligence. Instead, it cast him as the villain, who was jailed for his part in a conspiracy to bribe foreign officials to win currency printing contracts. He only found out after friends told him about it. He explained to the Australian Broadcasting Corporation that he then saw the story for himself.
After making the inquiry, it generated five or six paragraphs of information. The really disturbing thing was that some of the paragraphs were accurate. They contained accurate information about names, dates, times, places. And then there were other paragraphs that described things that were completely incorrect. It told me that I'd been charged with very serious criminal offences, that I'd been convicted of them, and that I'd spent 30 months in jail.
Mr. Hood says that if OpenAI, which owns the chatbot, doesn't correct the false claims, he'll sue. It would be the first defamation lawsuit against the automated service. However, a new version of ChatGPT apparently avoids the mistakes of its predecessor. It correctly explains that Mr. Hood was a whistleblower who was praised for his actions. But his lawyers say that defamatory material that damages the mayor's reputation still exists, and their efforts to have the mistakes rectified will continue.
Phil Mercer in Sydney. Now, new banknotes featuring the image of King Charles, the new British monarch, are being printed in their millions but will not enter circulation until the middle of next year. The BBC's Kevin Peachey was given exclusive access to the highly secure site where notes are being produced for the Bank of England. So let's ask him about it. Hi, Kevin.
Hello.
So let's start from the very basics. What is changing on banknotes in Britain?
Well, of course, we have a new monarch in Charles III, but all of the Bank of England banknotes we have in our wallets and purses carry the image of the late Queen, Queen Elizabeth II. So those notes, those banknotes are now being printed, new ones featuring the portrait of King Charles. But they won't actually go into circulation until the middle of next year.
And Kevin, you've actually seen them being printed. What's that process like?
Yes, I've been given a bit of a sneak preview during that printing process. And I'll be honest with you, a slightly surreal thing. It didn't really feel like real money. So when you're handed, as I was, a bundle of banknotes called a sausage, actually, which were worth £50,000. So that's about $62,000. It doesn't, you know, a whole bundle of them just handed over. They could pay off many a loan. But it didn't really feel quite real, to be honest. And of course, I had to give it back. A very highly secure centre. Outside, it looks a bit like a prison with sort of barbed wire all the way round. Inside, again, very secure. But it is a long, involved process. There are machines adding features to all these notes. It's not just a print works. There are special windows on the notes and ribbons and so on. And in there, I asked Sarah John, the chief cashier of the Bank of England, whose signature is on the note, why it will be so long before shoppers actually see them.
There are thousands of machines up and down the country that accept banknotes. So things like self-service checkouts, parking machines, and they all have to be updated to recognise the new design. And that's so that when people have one of these banknotes, they know they're going to be able to use it. Once we've got examples of all the notes printed, we can send them off to the equipment manufacturers. They then have to update their software to recognise the notes. That can take a couple of months. And then it takes 7 to 9 months usually to roll those software updates across the whole country.
And so it'll be a year after the coronation, really, before shoppers actually get hold of them and we see these new notes in circulation for real. So if you come to Britain on holiday or if you've got family here, they'll still be able to use the notes featuring the Queen for some time yet.
BBC Cost of Living correspondent Kevin Peachey. Sad to hear you didn't get to keep the banknote, but thanks for telling us all about it on Marketplace.
Thank you very much.
I don't know about you, but I think I would have tried to pocket a note or two or 10. Anyway, that's it from the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Leanna Byrne, and if you're celebrating, have a great Easter weekend.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.